Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, is it weird that I call you Mr. when we have been doing this show together for like 8 years?
It's like I'm Mr. Manager. We just call you Manager, you know.
Yeah, you're my supervisor here at work.
I don't mind it. I mean, that is one of my preferred titles. So I'll take
it. I hate it. I've always
called you Mr.
Yeah. People call me Mr. Sims sometimes. And I don't get mad at them because I know that they mean it respectfully. But like going back to when I started my blog in 2005, the site was called Chris's Invincible Superblog. I put my first name as the first thing on the site. You can call me by my first name. Mr. Sims bugs me. And I don't blame people, but like sometimes I'll tell people like, hey, you don't have to call me Mr. Sims. And then they'll get mad at me, which I don't understand.
They'll be like, I'm trying to be respectful.
Yeah. Then I apparently come off like some ingrate for being like, you can call me Chris. That's fine.
I definitely don't like being called Mr. Wilson. Because everybody when I was in elementary school had seen Dennis the Menace.
Boy, remember growing up in that time before Nickelodeon realized they could make their own programming?
Yeah, there was a lot of Dennis the Menace referencing going on with my last name. Being called Matt, there were like 20 other Matts in my class, so I've never liked just being my first name either because it's so common. The thing that a lot of people in my life have gone with as like what to call me is to call me by my full name, Matt Wilson.
Generally, that is what I do.
Yeah.
Because again, I know a lot of Matts. I also know a lot. My wife calls me Sims. Because she met me and her good friend, our good friend, he's also my friend, Chris Rowling at the same time. Yeah. Chris Rowling, who's been a guest host on this show. Thank you, Chris. And so instead of calling either one of us Chris, she calls him Rowling and me Sims. I'm her husband.
That's not totally – I've heard of married people calling each other by like last name nicknames or something like that. That makes a degree of sense.
Is it weird that Dennis the Menace had like a huge presence – this is how it is for me anyway, like a huge presence in my life and then no presence in my life, like as of like 1992, it's gone.
I think that's the cultural trajectory of Dennis the Menace. Yeah. Like it was Macaulay Culkin movies or
– I didn't even – what? There were Macaulay Culkin movies?
It wasn't Macaulay Culkin. It was another kid. It was the kid who was in Home Alone 3. Was okay. Dennis the Menace in a movie where Walter Matthau was Mr. Wilson.
Do you want to know the worst thing that your mind can do? I know the name of the kid who played Dennis the Menace on the like 50s Dennis the Menace show. It's Jay North.
Jay North, yeah.
Why do I know? There are so many things I wish I could remember, Matt. Faces of loved ones that I have difficulty recalling.
What's worse about that 50s Dennis the Menace show is how he was a well-behaved child. Anyway, what do we do on the show?
The show, Matt?
We talk about comic strips that get adapted into cartoons and movies, I suppose.
That is actually true. That is frequently what we discuss.
But this week, what we're doing is something we have been doing for a little while now. We're going to be ranking some comic book characters sent in list form by our listeners. That is going to be a segment called Panel President. It is going to be our entire interview segment for this episode. So we hope...
It's just us today, baby.
That's right.
It's just your faves, Chris and Matt. We're together. That's why we can waste so much time at the beginning of the show.
That's right. We don't have anybody to impress. We're just hanging out at home. But we do have some business to take care of, Chris, before we get into ranking some characters. And we're going to start by thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
I would love nothing more than to do this thing. Matt, you're telling me about the people who want to support the show. They want to help us out, which thank you so much to everyone who does. In olden times, in days gone by, you would have to get a check or money order. You would have to go to the grocery store, pay 25 cents to get a money order. That's money on top of money. And then you would get a stamp. That's more money. You're like 58 cents into it now. And then you would have to send it. You would have to address it neatly. If you address a letter, block lettering is best, I've heard. And mail that thing down to 417 Gimmick Street. But you don't have to do that anymore. Right now, you can just go to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as a dollar a month to help us pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills.
That's right, Chris. And I don't have any new names to read this time. We've had some edits to people's pledges, both up and down. It's something that happens at the end of the month. Sometimes we get it.
Yeah.
You don't have to feel bad about it. But no new people. But you could be a new person who has their name read out on the show during this part if you head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in as little as $1 a month to help us out, to keep this show going, to keep our Every Story Ever specials 2 hours every single month, to keep Movie Fighters going, to keep Snack Situation specials going, bonus audio that goes out to people who pledge at $5 or more per month. Everybody who pledges gets ad-free episodes of everything that we do, except for the bonus audio. People at higher levels get line-stepping privileges for the ranking segments that we do. I'm about to send out a couple more t-shirts to people who should be getting those. So they're at the highest level, the t-shirt level. So if any of that sounds cool to you, head on over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kick in a little money if you can. With that, Chris, it's time to do some checks and recs.
Let's do it.
Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
My check this week is that I have been trying to get out of the house more. So I've been going and working at a coffee shop, which I haven't done for a while. I do that sometimes if I start to feel like depressed, you know, a little change of setting, you know, actually putting on like clothes that you can wear outside the house helps to elevate the mood sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Even working from home, like in my home office, I try to put on real clothes every day just so I don't feel like a hermit, you know?
Mm-hmm. I said this to Aiden the other day. I was like, yeah, I actually feel pretty good going to a place where people are, but not interacting with those people. And she was like, yeah, that's what going to work is. And I was like, oh, right. Because, you know, when she's around and I'm working from home, obviously I talk to my wife all the time. But being surrounded by people who are also working and who are, like, eating it's very good for me. And I like it. So I've been going over to a local coffee and pie shop here in Durham that I've been having a lot of fun at. It actually makes me very productive. I've been able to get through a lot of work, which is nice. So, you know, if you haven't left the house in a while, if you're the kind of person who works from home, maybe put shoes on and see if that helps your mood at all, because that's what I've been up to. I've also had some pretty good pie. Matt, what have you been up to this week?
I'm going to take my check here to do a little bit of housekeeping for the show, just so people are aware of this stuff and don't get blindsided by it. Speaking of getting out of the house, I'm going to be taking a brief trip away from home. This week, at the end of the week, which means that I won't be around to record the show or edit it, which means we're taking Labor Day off. There will not be an episode of War Rocket Ajax next week. So set your watches accordingly. Set your calendars. Mark your day planners. We're taking Labor Day off. We will definitely be back the second week of September with new stuff as we push ever forward to episode 420, the greatest milestone of them all.
It's okay. We did episode 316. No one liked that. We liked it. Everyone else had no idea what we were doing. This is the second. Because I don't even think we did anything for episode nice. That was way early in the show's run.
That was a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah. This is our second chance at the milestone. Because there's only one number after this. And we're not going to get to it for like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got to really make it count. And we're gonna do it. But we are taking a week off, perhaps to prepare for that, but mostly just for vacation-ish purposes. Also, just so everybody knows, I'm also going to be taking a vacation at the end of September, the last week of September. So there might not be an episode the first week of October, or Chris, you might get a guest host. But I'm going to be in sunny Los Angeles, California, as Stone Cold Steve Austin would say. Doing stuff there. Some listeners, I've mentioned it on the show before, some listeners have already sent in recommendations of stuff for me to do in LA, which is very cool. I've already bought some improv tickets and stuff, so we're gonna be busy when we're there. But
wait, is there an improv show happening in Los Angeles when you're there?
There's one, and we're gonna go to it.
Okay.
But I wanted to do that housekeeping just so people knew what was up when there's not an episode next week. So don't say I didn't warn you.
Well, Matt, I hope you have fun down in Lipstick City.
Let's make some recommendations, Chris. What do you have to recommend?
I am recommending a board game that I think you in particular would enjoy, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe you are like me, and you have a great deal of affection for Choose Your Own Adventure books.
I do, yes. I was a big fan of those as a youngster.
Well, there is now a board game version of a Choose Your Own Adventure book. It's called Choose Your Own Adventure House of Danger. It is based on the actual like late 80s Choose Your Own Adventure book of the same name. And it's put out by Z-Man Games, which is the publishers of Pandemic, for instance, and The Great Pandemic Legacy, and the reasonably terrible Pandemic Legacy Season 2. That's a topic for another time. But it kept coming up in my Amazon recommendations, and I have some store credit at the local game store, so me and our good friend Ben Gilly went over there last week, and Ben enabled me, essentially. I was like, oh, this keeps coming up in my recommendations, and he literally like took it off the shelf and handed it to me, and he was like, get it! So I did, because that's all it takes. And basically, there is a board in which you keep track of the danger level, because occasionally you will be asked to roll a die and see if you meet or exceed that number. And then there's a psychic level that you go around that determines like what happens. Like if you're at level 2 on the psychic level track, this happens. The rest of the game is made up with cards. There's a stack of story cards that are kind of like tarot card sized, and then there's a stack of clue cards. And it's otherwise structured like a Choose Your Own Adventure book. Like, they're all numbered, and you make the choices and go to the card that is determined by your choice. But you also get different options based on what you have in your inventory, because there's an inventory system. You get different goals you have to meet to clear each chapter. I don't know how expanded it is from the original novel, but it has that great getting a Choose Your Own Adventure book from the library feel of it being vaguely old. Like there's a thing right up front about how you hear the phone ringing and you have to go downstairs to get it, which here in 2018 is bonkers. But it's designed to be for one or more players. Because you can go through it solo if you'd like, but Aiden and I were going through it, and all you do is you take turns reading the cards, and then the active person chooses the next part of the adventure. So I think you would actually have a lot of fun with this. I think you and Marlene, specifically, would find this very entertaining. The best part is that at the start of the game, you are supposed to turn over the game board and look at a mysterious image on the back for 2 minutes because that is a prophetic dream you have. Because as you are referred to consistently in the game, you are an aspiring detective and psychic investigator. You get prophecies at various points of the game. It's super fun. It's really well designed. It sells for about $25 retail and is well worth picking up. I am having a real blast with it. We did the first two chapters the other night, and it was super fun. Matt, what is your rec this week?
My rec is an app that you can get from your phone or on your phone. I guess it kind of comes from your phone also. So that wasn't entirely wrong. I've never exactly been like a casino game guy, like a gambling guy, except when I am. And I don't know any other way to put that. Like, I got invited to a poker game when I briefly lived in Atlanta and got really into being in that poker game. And
I'm sorry, I am having a wonderful time imagining Matt Wilson, ATL poker player. What color was your suit?
It's got to be purple. You know, yeah. It's got to be purple.
Of course.
But like, I occasionally will play blackjack, but I don't know exactly what series of circumstances. I ended up getting this thing where there was this poker game that popped up, maybe in an ad or something even, and it was called Poker Heat, and it looked fun, and I was like, okay, I'll play that game. So I downloaded it from my phone because I was looking for something to play on my phone, because I always am. And I was like, if this game sucks, I'll just delete it, and that'll be that. But turns out, it's actually a really, like, well-done online poker game. It provides you with just enough chips to play and enjoy it. It's absolutely a freemium game. Like, do not get me wrong. It's a game that tries to get you to buy more chips with real money all the time. Just like every other free iPhone game, right? But, like, it never takes too long to get the other players to play. It's not super glitchy. The way that like all the players being at the table works is really fun. And man, it is such a great feeling to like catch that one card you were hoping to get and get that good hand and win a big, like a big pot of money. Mm-hmm. Like it's super nice to feel that after you've like, you know, folded on the last 10 hands. Cause I'm one of those, I'm a safe poker player. Like I fold until I have the cards. Right. But once you get the cards, there's a, like a nice adrenaline rush of like, oh, I'm going to raise that. I'm going to raise again. Like when somebody goes all in on you and you've got the cards, man, that shit's good. So if you're like me, somebody who enjoys gambling when there's not money involved, then Poker Heat is an iPhone game that you could download and play and have fun with.
I am not a gambling man, by which I mean I am not good at it. And I had never been in a casino until I was on the cruise ship.
Yeah.
In international waters.
Sure.
And now I know I can never go to a casino.
You got in. You went in.
It's bad.
Oh, boy. You definitely get that mindset of like, I'll just play one more hand.
Yeah. And the thing is, you go in there. I played some blackjack, Matt. And yeah. What happens in blackjack is you sit down, someone turns over a card, and then your money goes away. that happened to me, and I laughed. I was like, well, this is ridiculous.
So deal me two more.
Yeah, let's go again. Let's see how this shakes out.
Yeah, it's like curiosity will kill you.
Yeah,
it will kill you. You gotta be like, oh, I don't care what. I fold. I don't care what the cards are. I don't think I'm gonna win. Yeah, so sometimes you just have to do that, as Kenny Rogers wisely said.
I didn't know when to walk away. I didn't know when to run. It was rough, buddy.
All right. That is going to do it for our checks and recs. Chris, let's talk about some comics.
Let's do it. We got some good ones this week.
I don't know which one to start with, Chris. There was a new Punisher number one. Maybe we can talk about that one.
Yeah, this is Punisher volume 18 or whatever it is. That's not a joke. I think it might be volume 18. Let's see. The first NS Punisher was 7. So that's where we're at now.
There's been a lot of Punisher number one since then. That is true.
Yeah, this one is by Matt Rosenberg and Szymon Kudryansky. Szymon Kudryansky. Colorist Antonio Fabella and litterer Corey Petit and cover artist Greg Smallwood. First of all, Matt Rosenberg is someone who is like now everywhere at Marvel, right? Like all of a sudden everywhere. And I think very deserved. I thought this issue was super fun.
I also thought it was fun. It's interesting to see the Punisher in this like political intrigue kind of setting.
It's political intrigue, but it's also Marvel Universe bullshit.
It's supervillain political intrigue.
It's supervillain political intrigue. Because essentially, what this reminded me of more than anything else was the Fraction Punisher. Because it's Marvel Universe Punisher. In that he's literally going after the Mandarin and Baron Zemo. It's spinning out of the events of Secret Empire. And so it's Hydra and Roxxon and Punisher with, like, super weapons. And that's something that I think that was gone for so long. And generally speaking, it's not the version of the Punisher you get a lot. Like, Greg Rucka's Punisher with Marco Giacchetto, like, that was very much a, you know, he teamed up with Spider-Man and Daredevil that one time, but it felt like a much less superhero universe story, if that makes sense. But this is, like, full-on, I have a super gun, and I want some War Machine armor.
Yeah, he gets video game weapons in this issue, which is pretty wild.
Yeah.
And pretty great. But that's you know, by virtue of the fact that he's going up against Hydra, he gets all their, like, super high-tech terrorist weaponry.
Yeah.
And turns it on them.
He literally gets a magic bullet.
That, I guess, spoiler, so skip ahead if you don't want to hear this, that he kills the Mandarin with.
He shoots the Mandarin in the face. Surprising.
Yeah, surprising.
I knew something was going to happen. About halfway through this issue, I was like, oh, there's going to be a, like, one of these guys is going. So now the book is The Punisher versus Baron Zemo, which I think is going to be very interesting and very entertaining.
Yeah, I felt like this number one issue was a little slow to get off the ground. Like, the Punisher doesn't show up until maybe 10 pages into the book or something. There's a lot of setup with Baron Zemo and Roxxon and Hydra and, you know, all that kind of stuff, kind of getting the chess pieces in place. But once the action gets going, it's great.
Yeah, there's a scene set in an elevator in this issue that is a very, very good use of the 9-panel grid.
All right. The next comic that we're going to talk about is Action Comics number 1002. We talked about Superman last week and how, you know, kind of disappointed we are in that book. Action is the opposite side of the coin.
I cannot believe how good Action is. We've talked about, even in Superman, where he's fighting Rogel Zar, that Bendis's Clark is really good.
Yeah.
Like, his Superman is really good. This is all that Clark doing stuff in Metropolis. And it's very, it's Superman investigating the arsons, right? So it's
The arsons were the best part of Man of Steel. That was the best subplot of Man of Steel. And Action is the book that picks up that subplot.
It reminds me of the stuff I like about Bendis. It's the not necessarily smaller stories, because it does get very superhero-y by the end of 1002, but not cosmic in the way that Rogel Zar and Earth's Trapped in the Phantom Zone and Jor-El is showing up. Like, that stuff's really cosmic, and I don't think it's working. But this is Superman investigating a series of arsons. And just the fact that Superman cares about a series of arsons as much as he cares about all the other stuff plays to Bendis's strengths in a way that I don't know if I've enjoyed this much in a while. There's so many good scenes in this book.
Yeah, and instead of taking something cosmic, this takes what would be a local issue with the Arsons and makes it a global one. Mm-hmm. Like, by the end of this issue, it's global.
Yes.
Basically, there's this global crime syndicate that is that has some involvement in everything. And we also find out about a mole. And I kind of – one of my issues with this issue is who the mole is, because she's like, you know, a black woman who's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that character – we can find out more about that character, and maybe – Bendis can introduce more diverse cast members so it's not so glaring. I did notice that as I was reading this, though. The one other thing I would point out about this issue as a demerit, but otherwise overall I thought it was really good. It starts with Perry White yelling at one of his reporters about a headline on page one that is basically libelous. It says that Superman killed this mobster guy.
Well, part of the plot of the issues, if you haven't been reading it, and I actually really like this plot, is that the villains are quote-unquote framing Superman,
yeah.
But the frames are obviously fake.
He's yelling at her, one, the headline is libelous, two, how in the fuck would Perry White not know what was going on the front page of his paper before it was published?
Especially the headline, Superman drops gangster to his death.
Yeah.
Perry White would see that. That's an important headline. There would be a meeting.
You'd think he'd look at A1
yeah.
before they went to print. But aside from that, I do really like all the voices of the characters in here are super good, particularly Clark's.
Yeah. And despite that, like, I think Bendis's Perry is actually a very distinct Perry voice that we don't get a lot, you know?
He's a tough boss, but also very clearly a good moral man.
Yeah. It's, this is the book with Perry and Jimmy and Lois and Cat Grant in it. Like, this is the Superman book that I really want, you know? And I gotta say, we've been talking a lot about Bendis. Obviously, Bendis is, for a lot of people, the draw in this issue. He's the superstar coming over from Marvel. But the art in this is by Patrick Gleason, Alejandro Sanchez, Josh Reed does letters. I love the way Gleason draws Superman and Clark. Because his
really,
Clark...
really mega good.
His Clark is amazing. Because it's very clearly, to us, Superman. He's, like, not cheating. He's not drawing Clark differently. But he draws Clark's acting as Clark in a way that is believably not Superman. Like, he's always hunched over. He's always got his shoulders up. And his hair is always kind of askew or matted down. Like, there's a scene where Clark goes from doing some undercover reporter stuff, which I thought was really good, to getting frustrated. And when Superman gets frustrated, he goes out to an asteroid field and punches some asteroids far away from where it can hurt anybody. And I like that entire sequence, the concept, the writing, the art, the colors. There's like a beautiful like lens flare effect on one of the pages. So good. Unbelievably good Superman. Like, mind-blowing.
There's a scene where the Guardian shows up in this.
Yeah, a new Guardian, I think.
And there's a scene where he gets, like, attacked by this almost, like, mystical thing that he describes as a red cloud. And that it looks like a painting. It's yeah. Such a beautiful image. I think it's, like, Gleason inking himself. It's so good. It's, like, Gleason has really leveled up on his art. I thought he had the best art in Action Comics 1000, and that has continued into these issues.
Yeah. So, like, I cannot believe it's this good. Especially compared to Superman, which has been a little disappointing.
Finally, we're going to talk about West Coast Avengers number 1. What a wild comic book.
Wild. This is, of course, by art by Stefano Caselli and Triona Farrell, letterer, the inimitable Joe Caramagna. a multi-talented, one of the best letterers working, also a great writer in his own right. The writer of this book, of course, the reigning, defending, intercontinental champion, Kelly Thompson.
This is a book that has sharks that can walk.
Land sharks. They have legs.
Land sharks. Yeah.
They're just running down the street at one point, which is very good.
They're just tearing up Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
It's so great. The team that ends up being in this book is really good. Like, it's got a bit of a Young Avengers sense to it in the way that the team is made up.
Well, because it's all young people in Hawkeye. Young people it's in all, Martin, I mean.
Yes, young two Hawkeyes. But also, there's that one character who is an absolute wild card wrench in the gears. In Young Avengers, it was young Loki.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's Quentin Quire. Because he shows up because Kate, who is assembling this team, is low on funds. She can't pay the members of the team. And so Quentin Quire shows up and says, oh, I can get us funding. And by the way that he's getting funding for the team is by having them shoot a reality show, which is a great idea. And second, like, he's there to just, like, essentially, you know, Quentin Quire is the one you don't know when he's going to turn on everybody else.
Right.
Which adds a real unpredictability to the book that I think is going to be really good.
Well, it's weird that you call Quentin Quire the wild card, because there's like 60% of this team is wild cards.
Well, it's also got Gwenpool.
It's also got Gwenpool, who is referred to in the book as the wild card. And then it's got, you know, it's got the Hawkeyes, the Hawkseye, the Hawkseyes?
Yeah, I think you got it.
But I feel like America Chavez isn't gonna betray the team, you know, but I feel like we could get a love triangle there, we could get weird cosmic adventures. Like, there's so many directions this book can go, and the direction it ends up going in by the end of the first issue, because the land sharks are only the first part, is delightful.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's a new character in here.
Uh-huh.
Who is Kate Bishop's new boyfriend. It's hard to know what to make of him just yet.
Yeah. I thought you were going to talk about the other new character.
Yes.
You talk about the biorobotic organism designed overwhelmingly for kissing.
Okay. He shows up at the very end.
Yes.
That's Brodok. Brodok.
Brilliant. Brilliant. It's also, there was another Kelly Thompson book that was this weird and this good this week. It was Mr. and Mrs. X number 2, where fucking TechNet showed up.
Oh, yeah. It just, this is clearly a comedy book.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how much I love those.
Oh, it's a comedy book with misfit superheroes who are kind of not very good. Yeah, I know. I know who likes that stuff.
Yeah, it's got a bit of a ticky vibe to it, that's for sure. But it's really well done. There's a whole, like, interview sequence where Kate Bishop is interviewing new people to be members of the team. And all of those characters, from direct parodies to just weird ideas, like Bread Boy, all very good. All very well done.
One last thing before we move on from West Coast Avengers. As someone who is a huge, huge fan of Gwenpool and Hastings and Gurihiro on that book, I was really worried about where Gwenpool was going to show up next, if Gwenpool was going to show up next, and who would be doing the next Gwenpool story. I could not have picked a better person. Like, Kelly Thompson is the person I would want doing a Gwenpool story, like writing a Gwenpool story. And Stefano Caselli does such a great job with her facial expressions in particular. It's exactly where I want her to be. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
All right, Chris, that's going to do it for our comic segment. So now the only thing left to do is to rank some comic book characters. That's right, everybody. It's time for Panel President.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
From the President's office in the White House.
President. Panel President.
You can hear the cheer coming. Now, what is the Panel President list?
Panel President. We take some listener-submitted lists and place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list from best to worst. We elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. Panel President. Chris, our first list of characters is going to come from Luke Hare, a line stepper. These are three characters, two of which were on his mind because he's been rereading a series, and a third was for personal reasons. We're starting with Batroc the Leaper.
Matt, I've still got your machine over here. I know I was supposed to bring it back, but I've still got your machine.
Well, we haven't been recording Smork of the Beast in a little bit, so
yeah. Well, I've got Hang on, let me. Oh, it just turned on. Hang on, let me see what. It's giving me a piece of paper. Rules.
Yeah, he does. He rules.
Yeah, it says Batroc rules because he does. He's great. Is there any character type that like brings us together, Predator handshake style, like shitty villains?
I would say no. I really love a B-lister.
Oh, I love a villain who it's their job. It's the best. And it's Batroc's job. Like, canonically, Batroc's job is to get beaten up by Captain America. That Kieran Gillen story, where he's on the phone with the guy, and he's like, yeah, I'm not gonna beat Captain America. He's Captain America. I can give you 15 minutes to get away. And that's why he makes the money.
You know what Batroc is the best example of? Supervillains who you might refer to as jobbers.
Yeah, he's enhancement talent.
They're not there for the main event. They might show up in the first few pages of an issue, and we see the lead characters fight with them already in progress, right? But it's gonna be fun.
Yeah. But every now and then they get a push.
Every now and then, but rarely.
Because here's the thing. There's different kinds of jobber supervillains, right? Like, there's the Juggernaut problem. Or actually, I guess it's not the Juggernaut. It's the Gladiator problem. Where Gladiator is super strong, can do anything. But 9 times out of 10 when he shows up, it's so that some other dude can smash him into the dirt. And we can go, oh, that guy's strong. Oh, right, Onslaught must be a big deal.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know? Batroc's not quite that. Because Batroc's just there to fight. And he's there so that Captain America can fight somebody for a minute. Also, he has a brigade of characters that are even worse. I was going to say that Batroc is probably the best example of the international stereotype villain, which is another very wrestling idea.
Yes.
That he's like kind of like, because Batroc is a weird French stereotype, right?
Yeah, he's also, I don't know how else to put this, he has that feel of like the supervillain who like clocks in and clocks out.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is just his day job.
Yes, and he's very upfront about that. Like, textually, I can think of so many good Batroc moments, and some of the best. He's really good in Gwenpool. We were just talking about Gwenpool. Batroc's super good in that book, which is largely about occupational supervillains. He's also really good in that issue where he gets drunk and is arguing with Machete, Zoran the Weapons Master. He's arguing with those guys. He's like, I could beat Captain America. I just haven't been trying to beat Captain America. And then Captain America shows up and they start fighting. And Batroc's like, hey, I will tell you everything you want to know, but you got to let me like punch you and act like I knocked you out in front of my boys. And Captain America's like, that is the quickest way to get where I'm going. Okay. That's that Grunewald shit.
Batroc's great.
I'm gonna throw this out there, Matt.
Yep.
Mark Grunewald, the most underrated comic book writer of all time.
Do you think he's actually underrated?
Or just because
people just don't know who he is anymore?
No, that dude was on Captain America for 10 years, and the only people who talk about him are you, me, and Kyle Starks, and Rico.
But I think it's because we, like, I don't know, he sadly passed on, and people just have not read his comics.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, a lot of that stuff is not reprinted. I mean, I have said before, this is the hottest take I have in comics, other than the Teen Titans are bad. My second hottest take is that Squadron Supreme's as good as Watchmen, but nobody knows it. Because Marvel didn't keep it in print, like DC kept Watchmen in print.
Yeah. So here's a question for you.
Yes.
Is Batroc better than Fin Fang Foom, which would put him in the top 100?
I mean, I feel like those are both characters that I get excited when they show up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I feel like Batroc's not gonna, like, Fin Fang Foom's not gonna show up and fight, I don't know, Gambit, right? Although maybe, I don't know, Mr. and Mrs. X is definitely in space.
They could definitely fight Fin Fang Foom and Mr. and Mrs. X.
But generally speaking, like, Fin Fang Foom is a, I don't know, Fin Fang Foom shows up in a lot of different stories. He's in that Christmas story where he's 6 feet tall.
He's that Marvel Comics bullshit to a T.
He is, but so is Batroc, is the thing. Ooh, it's tough. It's tough.
I mean, I think
Batroc's better than Dr. Dinosaur.
I think this is exactly the spot. He's either 100 or 101.
Here's the thing, though. I don't know if he's better than Fin Fang Foom. I do think he's better than Phony Bone.
Really?
Yeah. Jaime Reyes is where I have the, where I start to have the difficulty.
I don't think he goes above Jaime Reyes.
No, I don't think he goes above Jaime Reyes.
But okay, if that is what you're saying, then he's going to go in the list at number 99.
Yeah. Batroc was in a movie.
He was.
That's how wild this time that we're living in is. Batroc the Leaper, George Batroc.
Batroc the Leaper.
That's him. Enters the list at number 99.
Next here on Luke's list is Gwenpool, who we were just talking about.
Gwenpool's a relatively new character, right?
Yep.
Like, what, 3-4 years old?
Yeah, something like that.
Pound for pound, Gwenpool is the best new character of the 2010s.
We were asked recently about new legacy or new non-legacy characters.
Yes.
And Gwenpool is a really weird middle ground character where she's not a legacy character, but she kind of definitely is.
Yeah, she's completely a legacy character, except she's not.
Yeah.
Cause her creation is as a goof, but the character Gwendolyn Poole, who is the star of the book Gwenpool, is not the goof. She's a different goof. Which is that her name is Gwenpool. I mean, there's a lot of really great legacy characters. I mean, obviously, Kamala Khan is maybe has the best claim on what I just boldly gave to Gwenpool. But, like, for a relatively small number of appearances, Gwenpool ran, what, 24 issues about?
Yeah, that's about right.
Plus the specials and one issue of West Coast Avengers. Not a whole lot beyond those. Those are all good comics. Like, those are all A-plus comics.
Gwenpool's great.
Yeah, the problem is that, like, she's 4 years old. She has been around for a very, very short amount of time. We've only seen her in the context of, you know, Chris Hastings, who's a writer that we're both pretty huge fans of, and Guri Hiro, an art team that we are pretty huge fans of, and now Stefano Caselli and Kelly Thompson. Ditto.
Well, we got to rank her on what we got, right?
Mm-hmm.
So based on what we've got, where does Gwenpool go on the list?
I think she's definitely top 100 material.
Yeah. I mean, does she go above Batroc? That's a question.
I mean, yeah, I think so. Again, like, there's bad Batroc stories. There's, like, that's the thing. Right now, in August 2018, there's kind of not bad Gwenpool stories.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's a numbers game kind of thing, but you're right.
Numbers game. Pound for pound, issue for issue, I would put her at, like, where Becky Burdock is, who is another character with a relatively small number of appearances, but they're all extremely good. But now, can I justify putting her over Mr. Fantastic? Deadpool? Tommy Monahan? I don't know. That's tough. But those characters have all been in more bad comics than Gwenpool, except maybe Tommy Monahan.
I mean, I think the one to compare her against might be Dr. McNinja, another Chris Hastings character.
Well, we haven't actually talked about Gwenpool's deal.
Yeah.
Because I think Dr. McNinja, over the course of The Adventures of Dr. McNinja, turns into a very meta character. Like, Dr. McNinja turns into a commentary on storytelling in a really entertaining way. Gwenpool, her deal is that she's from our world. She's a huge fan of Marvel Comics. So her power, in quotation marks, is she knows everything about the universe. She knows all the secrets. She knows everybody's secret identity. She knows all the secret plans. She knows the history of the Marvel Universe. And she knows the rules of being in a comic book. And that, you know, nothing bad's going to happen to her because she's the star of the book. And that's why she becomes a hero instead of a villain, because villains, bad things can happen too.
Yeah, she even asks in that issue of West Coast Avengers that we were just talking about, she asks Kate if they're going to be a good guy team or a bad guy team.
Yeah. And which is a hilarious question for her to ask Hawkeye. I feel like Dr. McNinja is the character that starts out as the joke, like very clearly starts out as the joke and then, you know, changes over time. Gwen's got that basically from moment one and then ends up being in super, super smart comics that play with that idea. Like Gwenpool 16 and 17 are unbelievable. Pardon the pun. They're unbelievably good. Like, unbelievably well-structured.
Okay, did that put her above or below Dr. McNinja?
I would say above. It's harder to justify putting her above Deadpool, but I would put her above Helena Bertinelli.
But would you put her above Hitman?
That's very tough. Hitman's pretty good.
I think she might go between Hitman and Dr. McNinja.
I think that's where we got to put her then. Respectable showing. Gwendolyn Poole enters the list number 78. What a great character.
What a great character indeed. All right, the last one here on Luke's list is Forge, who has no last name. Also, hi to James Leesk.
I'm not a huge Forge guy, to be honest with you.
As a support character, I have no problem with Forge.
Well, because he has one of those powers. Forge is interesting, right? But he has one of those powers that should make him the most powerful person in the world. But he's not. And so there have to be weird workarounds for why Forge is not where Tony Stark is, where Doctor Doom is, where any of those characters. Why isn't Forge Iron Man? Why isn't Forge an Avenger?
Yeah.
Why isn't Forge, at the very least, why is Forge not building Iron Man suits and working with Tony Stark?
All good questions. Because he is a genius level inventor who can basically invent anything.
His mutant power is that he can invent anything. Like, anything he can imagine, he can build. Because of the way that portrayals of Native American characters in comics have traditionally gone, he also has, like, shamanic abilities.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah, it's not my fave. He's a character that I consider to be before my X-Men, you know? Like, he's around when I get into the X-Men in the 90s, but he's not, like, on the cartoon. He's not the cartoon team. So he's not the character that I ever had a huge connection to. That said, I feel like he is a character for whom a lot of people probably have a very strong connection, because despite the stuff with the shamanic abilities, there are not a lot of Native American technologist characters.
Right.
It's kind of just Forge.
With all that said, where do we put him?
he's a tough one. He's a tough one. Because I think, like, he's, again, he begs a question that the comics don't answer satisfactorily. And I think that's probably the biggest mark against him. But I don't think, like, I'm not going to not read a book because Forge is in it, you know? I'm not going to roll my eyes when Forge shows up like I would for The Eradicator, for instance, like down at the lower end of the list. Like, I probably like Forge about as much as I like Aquaman. Maybe more.
How does Forge rank against Wiccan, Billy Kaplan?
I do roll my eyes pretty hard at Billy Kaplan. 90% because of the names. Because the names are bad.
Sure.
I don't think Forge is as good a character as Mr. Mixes Pitlick. But I think he's probably better than Billy Kaplan.
Okay, so in between them is Rewind.
Rewind, the Transformer, who makes me cry. I'm going to say Forge is better than him.
Okay, so between Mr. Mixes Pitlick and Rewind goes Forge.
Yes. Forge, who really does not have, like, a full name, does he? His name is Forge.
His name is Forge.
Yeah, there you go. Forge.
He was in the army. They called him Forge.
Yep. And when you enter the army, you lose your old name.
Next up, we have a list from Glenn Benedict.
All right.
Who has sent us a list of some of his favorite DC characters. First up, Glenn has for us Ambush Bug, Erwin Schwab.
Matt, you know how we've talked about Gru?
Yes.
And how there's kind of like a generational gap
yes.
for certain characters.
There's the Gru generation.
The Gru generation. That lost generation of Sergio Aragonés fans. Ambush Bug belongs to that generation. Not to the extent of Gru, where I read Gru and I'm just like, I don't get this. This is not for me. Like, I've read Ambush Bug, and I think, you know, Darkseid working at McDonald's, pretty great, unassailably. But Ambush Bug, I feel like, is not for me in the same way. Ambush Bug is for, like, you read, I think you and I had the same experience of, like, reading Bloom County when we were, like, 10.
Yeah.
Feel like Ambush Bug is for Bloom County people. You know? Does that make sense?
Okay. To a degree, yeah. It is that kind of humor.
Yeah. There's a certain kind of comedy that is that late 80s comic book comedy. And it doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, I get that. It's you might call it's Bloom County comedy or Doonesbury comedy.
Like, Ambush Bug's not political in the way that those often were.
No.
Like, and there's good jokes in Ambush Bug. I really like Johnny DC Continuity Cop. I think Johnny DC Continuity Cop is a better character than Ambush Bug and should be in comics all the time. Like, Go-Go Checks is a pretty good gag that I think is worth coming back. The problem with Ambush Bug, right, is that our generation has Deadpool. Because Deadpool's just Ambush Bug for us. Like, he's Ambush Bug if Ambush Bug was created in the 90s by Rob Liefeld. He's the weird, masked, fourth wall breaking character. But, and look, full disclosure, I have a personal investment in Deadpool. Deadpool Bad Blood, still available in hardcover. Pick it up. It's great. But, like, Deadpool's better? Because Deadpool's, like, an actual character. Like, Deadpool has comedy stuff, but, like, is an actual character.
Well, I don't know if it's intentional or not. Ambush Bug sounds a lot like Forbushman.
Do you think there... Oh, Matt, we might be onto something. Is there a generational gap? A Forbushman generation? An Ambush Bug generation? A Deadpool generation? And then, like, memes.
It's more than possible, yeah. Absolutely more than possible that those are the comedy characters of their respective generations.
Because, look, we're old now.
Oh, yeah.
Our time has passed. We will go into the West and diminish. You're literally on your way to Lipstick City, baby. Here's what I don't get about Ambush Bug. Why is Cheeks the Toy Wonder funny?
I don't know.
Is the least funny thing in the world to me. People are like, yeah, Cheeks the Toy Wonder. Hilarious. Don't get it. Does nothing for me. It's a weird looking doll. Okay.
All right, but we're talking about Ambush Bug the book instead of Ambush Bug the character.
Yeah, but it's like with a character like this where it's like he's a fourth wall breaking character, he's like it's very much all wrapped up together, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I can buy that. Well, let's rank him. I'm not exactly sure where he goes on the list.
I mean, look, this list is beneath the marble. The list exists. The list is the list.
That's right.
We are chipping away the unnecessary marble to reveal it to you. We are merely the arbiters. But I think Ambush Bug is going to go low. I think that's being filtered through your humble arbiters.
So below Spider-Ham?
I think Spider-Ham's an inherently funnier idea than Ambush Bug. Inherently funnier.
Spider-Ham is currently at number 312.
Yeah. I feel like Ambush Bug goes below Newspaper Spider-Man, who's unintentionally funnier. I think Doomsday is a bit like Doomsday's a better comedy character than Ambush Bug. Like I'm scrolling down hard.
I mean, well, okay, we talked about Snapper Carr recently. Snapper Carr is the lesser character of two similar characters. He's very of his time. Much like I feel like Ambush Bug is. I think I would put Ambush Bug above Snapper Carr, maybe.
But would you put him above Black Bolt? Above Maxi Zeus?
I mean, I'm probably just as likely to read an Ambush Bug book as I am a Black Bolt book.
And look, I know people are out there. I know people are out there tweeting at us right now, like explaining why Cheeks the Toy Wonder is funny and why Ambush Bug is good. And that's fine. I'm not going to take him away from you. And if they do in a new Ambush Bug series tomorrow, God bless you. But like, yeah, I would rather read about Maggot from the X-Men than Ambush Bug.
Okay, so we're going further down the list. It's got to be better than Robbie Baldwin.
Did we talk about the key's name being Grant Porter, like he grants you entrance to a port?
Yeah, I think we did.
That's bad.
I think Ambush Bug's got to be better than Speedball / Penance.
Only because of Penance.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Let's put him below Skin from Generation X, above Speed Demon, who no one cares about.
Okay.
Except you.
So Ambush Bug goes in the list at number 328.
Yeah. Yeah, Erwin Schwab. Like, there's a lot of characters that have names like that, too. Like, it's a very, very the producers kind of gag. I don't know. Not for me. Not for me.
Next up on Glenn's list is Matter Eater Lad, Tenzel Kim.
Great. Planet Bismol, that's one of the worst jokes in comics. Love him. Okay, people are always like, people don't read Legion of Superheroes comics because of Matter Eater Lad. Because they see Matter Eater Lad and they're like, that's stupid. I will never read this book in which this is a character. I have seen it happen with my own two eyes. And that's fine because that weeds out the weak. If you can't handle me at my Matter Eater Lad... You don't deserve me at my bouncing boy. Matter Eater Lad's fucking brilliant. It's the best, like, it's one of the best ideas in comics because that is when you separate the idea of having superpowers from reality. You are freeform associating at that point. The picture, when you see the, like, if you go back into, like, the Legion archives, they have, like, the pictures that illustrate everybody's power. So it'll be, like, Cosmic Boy, like doing magnet stuff and, like Lightning Lad shooting lightning out and like Bouncing Boy bouncing. There's always like a picture of Matter Eater Lad eating a fucking rock.
Oh yeah.
It's so
always
good.
Eating a rock.
Always eating that. He loves it. He loves rocks.
or like some kind of like a fence or something. Like I've seen, there's lots of Matter Eater Lad eating things, mimetic images.
Yeah. He's great. He is great. And the weird thing is he did not get a 0 hour reboot. Well, he did. He did. He was the chef for the Post-Zero Legion. He didn't get a cool new code name, like how Lightning Lass became Spark, and Lightning Lad became Livewire. Projectra became Sensor, you know? Like, everybody got cool names. Tenzelchem, just Tenzelchem. Cooking food for the Legion back at the house.
Okay, so I'm assuming you want to scroll up for Matter Eater Lad.
You know it, baby.
Is he, like, Overdrive good? Or better?
Weirdly very similar to Overdrive.
Yeah. Like, I think he goes in that part of our list where he's, like, a weird, neat, cool concept embodied in a character.
You know where I was looking? Who I think is, like, I think you're going to convince me that he doesn't go this high. Weirdly, super comparable in a certain way to Dr. Simon Hurt.
Okay, I can kind of see that. I do think you're way too high.
Yeah, they are characters that require the structure of a universe so that they can be three levels removed from it.
The truth is, Matter Eater Lad does not work outside of the context of the Legion.
He could. I'm available. I got a pitch. Matter Eater Lad eats the DC universe.
Well, as of this point, as of right now, as of this recording, he needs the Legion, which I think makes him certainly not better than anybody on the list up to the point where we get to like Fire and Ice probably.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I would also rather read about like Boom Boom or Spoiler, like, cause they feel more like fleshed out characters. Matter Eater Lad is just a very, very funny, cool, silly, but good, silly gimmick.
I can't believe you are denying the emotional core of Matter Eater Lad. How dare you? I mean, I'm looking where Overdrive is. Yeah. Matter Eater Lad ain't as good as Blade. Well, no. Matter Eater Lad might be as good as Blade in comics.
Yeah, we talked about that when we liked Blade. Like, yeah. He's movie Blade is always going to overshadow comics Blade.
He's definitely not as good as Ultra Magnus, who's a little dude inside a big dude.
You love that guy.
I love that guy. He's on par with Grifter, honestly.
I don't think he's better than Juggernaut.
I don't think he's better than Juggernaut. I think he's probably better than Grifter.
Okay, then Matter Eater Lad goes between Juggernaut and Grifter.
Yeah, give us a little more Beetle 2 action. Here's the thing about Overdrive, since you brought him up. Overdrive has very recently been rendered irrelevant, because now we have Ghost Rider, who does what Overdrive does, but is also Ghost Rider. So, sorry, Overdrive.
Yeah, somebody stole your gimmick. Sorry about that.
Tenzelchem of the planet Bismol. Oh, it's so bad. It goes into the list of number 235, the number of rocks he can eat in a single sitting.
Next on Glenn's list is someone we've already ranked, Starman 3, Mikal Thomas.
Mikal Thomas is at 186, very high on the list. Good job, Mikal Thomas.
Now Glenn has two characters at number 4 and 5 and a little bit of an explanation.
Okay.
He's got Monsieur Mala and the Brain. And he says he would argue that these two should be ranked together and might even count as one pick, as they are always together. They don't function apart from each other outside of some of the animated series like Young Justice using Brain as a member of the Light, or Batman Brave and the Bold using Mala as an all-gorilla team. In an all-gorilla team. Even their action figures come packaged together. So the question I guess we're being presented with is, are Monsieur Mala and the Brain separate characters?
This is going to set a precedent, right? Because if we rank Monsieur Mala and the Brain, together, then we have to consider other paired characters to be ranked together, like Andrea and Andreas von Strucker. Like, they should probably be ranked together. But then where do we draw that line?
Yeah.
I do think we should rank Mala and the Brain together. This is going to have to be a case-by-case basis thing.
We ranked Rebus, mm-hmm. who is technically three characters.
Three characters. Yeah.
So...
I will say, I did just check, they are listed on Wikipedia separately, but the picture is the same in both articles.
Yeah, it's tough, because they are really two distinct characters. They're just always together.
Yeah, but they are almost never seen. Like, again, virtually never seen apart in comics. They have never done anything in comics, the versions we are ranking, that would qualify them. Like, one has done something the other has done. There are very few other characters that I think you could make that argument.
Yeah.
Even Andrea and Andreas von Strucker, honestly.
Okay. Then, I mean, if we were going to rank Tomax and Zaymot, haven't we said this before that they have to go, like, back-to-back on the list at least?
Well, this also removes the problem, the Tomax and Zaymot problem. Tomax and Zaymot are more distinct characters because of the IDW G.I. Joe stuff where I think it's Zaymot dies. And Tomax, like, joins G.I. Joe as, like, an informant. But generally speaking, I feel like we would rank Tomax and Zaymot together just so that we wouldn't have to have the conversation of who ranks higher.
Right, yeah.
Tomax, obviously, would rank higher. I am okay ranking them as one line on the list.
Okay. Well, then I guess that's what we're going to do.
Okay. You ready for my third hot take of the recording session?
Hit me with it.
Monsieur and Mala and the Brain being in love is a bad joke. But the fact that all of us rolled with it made it good.
Okay.
Because I think, like, there is a... I mean, look, that issue of Doom Patrol is... late 80s, early 90s, right? Doom Patrol number 34?
It's reasonably early in the Morrison run on Doom Patrol. It's when Robot Man had that temporary new body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, part of the comedy of that scene is, oh, it's a, you know, look at comic, it's like, it's Morrison, right? It's like, look at comic books. Look at how weird comic books are. Here's a talking French gorilla and a brain in a jar, and they're in love with each other. I don't feel like it is Grant Morrison's intent to be, and also they're gay. Isn't that also inherently funny? But I think that is an aspect of it. Whether that was applied by, say, the Wizard magazine audience in the 90s, which is where I found out about that.
It feels to me like the joke... the intended joke is they're a brain and a gorilla that are in love with each other.
But again, I do feel like the Wizard magazine audience, it was always presented as being a gay thing.
I mean, I would suspect that Grant Morrison did not care that it was a gay thing or think that it was that was the joke. But, you know, people are going to take things the way they're going to take them.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think Morrison's track record speaks for itself. Point being, though, we were all kind of like, yeah, why not? And I think that's kind of the magic of comics. But I think they get points for that. That it is something that we were all like, yeah, okay, that works. That makes sense. Gorilla and Brain together forever. Because prior to that, they have virtually no character development, right? They're literally in the Brotherhood of Evil.
Yeah, I mean that's the problem with Monsieur Mala, certainly, is that he's overshadowed by a whole bunch of other more interesting primate characters in DC Comics.
Mm-hmm.
On the list of apes who are villains, Monsieur Mala is lucky to make the top 10.
Yeah.
And that's just because there's so many.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, number one, Grodd.
Yeah.
Like, Grodd's the champ. Probably number two, Solovar. Probably number three, Sam Simeon from Angel and the Ape. Honestly, he was a comic book artist. Imagine seeing that guy at a con.
Mr. Mall in the Brain, fun, but, like, nothing... Aside from the Doom Patrol stuff, nothing super memorable.
So, where are we looking? Probably not as good as Dormammu, right? His head's on fire.
He does have a head that's on fire all the time.
And again, you mentioned spoiler. I would rather read spoiler. I think Ayla Rand's is a better character.
We probably like Stegron more.
I definitely like Stegron more. I like Mr. Mix's Pitlick more. Okay. Here's the line. Here's the line. Master Pandemonium is the line.
Okay.
Do we like him better than we like Master Pandemonium, whose arms are babies?
Well, here's who's right below Master Pandemonium. Captain Cold and Mandrak the Dark Monitor. That's Dax Novu. I like them both more.
I do like Dax Novu. He's a Dark Monitor. He came back, Matt.
He came back.
Okay, where does he rank against King Mob, who is Grant Morrison? Where do they rank, I should say? We're ranking two of them.
Probably below.
Well, then we got to put them below Adam X the Extreme.
And he probably goes below. They probably go below Multiple Man.
This one's getting tougher. This one's getting tougher.
Maybe better than Signal Man?
Yeah. Definitely better than Stick. He's an asshole.
What about Lori Lamaris?
Lori Lamaris is a mermaid who was Superman's college girlfriend.
That's as weird, yes.
That is as weird. I think we put Mr. Mall on the Brain directly below Lori Lamaris.
Okay, then that's what we're going to do.
All right, number 289 on the list. Our first double entry.
Okay, Glenn did have a backup for us.
Okay.
Which is Dream Girl, Durinal.
I love Dream Girl. Dream Girl's great. Dream Girl's power is that she has prophetic dreams, which means she is a legionnaire who can use her powers only while she is asleep. At one point, she takes over the Legion by kicking everyone else out, a thing that Saturn Girl also did in a separate story. Dream Girl is not the best legionnaire, but she is delightful. I love Dream Girl.
Well, this one's all you, buddy. This one's all your serang.
Dream Girl's not as good as Matter Eater Lad. I would say Dream Girl. Dream Girl's also probably not as good as Mix Pitlick. I would say Dream Girl's better than Captain Cold. Bold statement. Bold statement. I stand by it. I don't think she's as good as Master Pandemonium. Matt, his arms are babies, and sometimes they're devils.
That's true. So Dream Girl enters the list at number 268.
Yeah, she's great. What a great costume, too. All of her costumes are great. Got, like, the shiny costume post-Zero Hour, the three boots. She's got, like, clouds on her because she's sleepy. Oh, Dream Girl. She's so good.
Next, the next list we have is going to come from Cam Brogdon, who has two lists for us to pick from.
Okay.
We have unranked Jack Kirby Avengers.
Interesting.
Or fixing the panel president gender ratio one list at a time.
That one. That All one, right. Please. We're going to get first, to the Kirby characters, don't worry.
The first one on that list is Jubilee. Jubilation Lee.
You talking about the best X-Man?
She's very good.
Yeah, she's great.
She was a vampire for a while.
She wasn't. Not anymore. She is no longer a vampire. Instead of being a vampire, she's now a mom. Because that is the evolution that I think we can all relate to. Teen, vampire, mom.
Mom. That's just human development.
I'm in my mom phase, I think.
I'm still 36. A vampire.
You're still a vampire. I go to bed early. No, I love Jubilee. I wrote a comic with Jubilee in it. The most fun character to write in that entire comic. More fun to write than Wolverine, more fun to write than Cyclops, who was shockingly fun. Jubilee's the best. Like, I'm not kidding when I say she's the best X-Men. I have come to believe that firmly. over the past few years.
Here's the thing about Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not arguing against anything you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think it's worth noting that it took Marvel a while to figure out what to do with Jubilee after the 90s. Because she was the most 90s character.
She really is. She really is. And I think the problem was that they kind of stopped having her be a teen and made her a vampire.
Because
that's the problem with, like, the characters who fill that role, right? Because that's, you know, Jubilee is the 90s Kitty Pryde. And Kitty Pryde also has that weird section where between, like, Wolverine's sidekick and between she's in charge of the school, right? Those are both good Kitty Prydes, but there's that weird period in between where she's in, like, Mechanics and the Pride and Wisdom series, which aren't necessarily bad, but it's a lot of, okay, what do we do with Kitty Pryde now? You know, Kitty Pryde Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. is in there. And I feel like Jubilee got the same thing, where it was like, okay, Jubilee is clearly older than the new crop of X-Men we want to bring in. And we want to do new characters who are going to fill that role, which ultimately I think went to Armor for a little bit, and then to Laura.
Well, and you also had all those characters in New X-Men.
Yeah. Which Jubilee was not a part of.
No.
Which I think Grant Morrison's biggest sin was not putting Jubilee in that book. Oh,
well, Jubilee is so 90s that sort of phasing her out in the 2000s almost seemed like a statement of some kind.
Yeah.
But they finally figured out what to do with Jubilee again, which is good.
Yeah. I love her. She's great. But she did have that weird period of her career. Existence, I guess career is probably not the right word, but you know what I mean. Where she's a vampire for a little bit. Because the weird thing is, she was a vampire for a long time. She is only recently not a vampire. She was a vampire, I think, when we started this podcast.
Yeah.
This podcast is almost 100% in the Vampire Jubilee era.
Okay, let's rank Jubilee.
Now, this was on the cartoon, Matt. Do you remember when she blew up that arcade game?
Oh, yeah.
And that guy was like, hey, do you know how much that thing costs? And she went, yeah, a quarter.
Wild.
So great.
That, to these days, that would lead to legal action.
Oh.
So I'm definitely thinking you would put Jubilee in the top 100.
I would absolutely put Jubilee above Cyclops and Clint Barton.
Okay.
Absolutely. Change my mind.
I mean, if that's where you want to put her, then put her there. Put her – I mean, Kim Pine, I think I have a very special place in my heart for.
I know you do. That's what I was – but, like, I don't think she's as good as Supergirl. I don't think she's as good as Kara Zor-El. I have a personal love of the Squire, a.k.a. the Knight, three, Beryl Hutchinson. I know you like Kim Pine a lot, but I – like – Jubilee's better than the first Hawkeye.
All right, then put her in that nice spot.
She put her goes in that at nice the nice spot. Number.
Next on the list from Cam is Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff. Natasha Romanova, I should say.
I like Black Widow.
Yeah.
But I like Black Widow fine. You know? I think she's a good character. I think, like, everything
I
about
really
her is good.
That, I really love that Wade Somni book.
Yeah.
From a couple years ago. It was fucking great.
I love all the, like the Red Room stuff, I think is really cool. I think that's a cool origin for her. I love that she's 100 years old.
Yeah.
People forget that shit.
I love that she's a spy.
I love that she's a spy. I love that she was, like, originally a villain.
Yeah.
Not my favorite character named Black Widow.
Really?
Well, I like the Golden Age Black Widow who was Satan's hitman.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Clairvoyant.
I thought you were going to say Yelena Belova, which would have been surprising.
I do like Yelena Belova, but I think Yelena Belova only exists to make Natasha Romanova better.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Because, like, that story of Yelena Belova showing up and being like, what's up, I'm the new Black Widow, is pretty boss.
I put money on it right now. If they, when they make that Black Widow movie, mm-hmm. Yelena Belova is the villain in that movie. Bet on it. Put money on it today.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would not take that bet. But what are they going to do now that we've seen Scarlett Johansson Black Widow with blonde hair?
Good point. Okay. So, I like Black Widow a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's better than Huntress.
I like Huntress a lot. I think that is kind of the fundamental difference between growing up reading primarily DC comics in the 90s and growing up primarily reading Marvel comics in the 90s.
That's true. I was reading Avengers when she was leading them, my man.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think you're right, because she has certainly had more longevity than the post-Zero Hour Huntress.
Yeah.
Who sadly ceased to exist in 2011, along with my beloved post-Zero Hour DC Universe, Mourn You Till I Join You. Yeah, I think that's a good place for it. So, below Deadpool.
Above Huntress, yes.
Above Huntress. I think that fits. That feels right.
Next up on the list from Cam, Batgirl / Oracle, Barbara Gordon.
Oh, shit. Matt, I want you to look at this list.
I'm looking.
I want you to look at number 10 on this uh-huh. list.
Yep.
And tell me you don't want to put Barbara Gordon there.
Oh, I absolutely do.
Yeah, Barbara Gordon's number 10.
So be it. No, current number 10 is Joker.
Yeah.
Barbara Gordon's going to go above Joker.
Barbara Gordon. You could maybe talk me into putting her above Lois Lane, but I think she goes right here at number 10.
You're asking the wrong guy to do that.
Yeah. So I guess, well, what should we, I guess she's Batgirl again, right? So Batgirl is the current name. So Barbara Gordon, aka Oracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be Barbara Gordon.
Just so everybody's clear on this, she's the Batman family character who didn't have a motivating tragedy before that was Tim Drake's deal. She's the character who decided she was going to be Batgirl and did not let anyone else tell her she couldn't be. That fucking rules. And then Oracle was an amazing character. Oracle is making that chicken salad, if you know what I mean.
No, I was going to say Oracle was proof that Barbara Gordon was such a strong character. An attempt to change her irreparably, and what would take a lot of characters out of comics
mm-hmm.
or out of a lead role in comics, she found a new role that was equally important.
Yeah,
as Oracle,
yeah.
Which was great.
Also, with the exception of the new 52 suit, consistently great designs. The original Batgirl yeah. costume is great. The like animated style, the gray costume, great.
The current Batgirl costume is great.
Current Batgirl costume, great. The Battlestar Cameron Stewart costume, great. Batgirl rules in every conceivable way. And I love that, like, once she became Batgirl again, she didn't really stop being Oracle in the way that it would have been easier just to make her, you know, a Nightwing style character, you know? What a good character. Barbara Gordon. The best. Not the best, the 10th best.
Next we have Miss America Chavez.
I like Miss America Chavez.
I do too.
I love that her deal is she's cool. Like that's number one. She's cool. She's cool as shit.
Yep.
Number two, she will kick you into space. Those are like her defining characteristics.
But like, there's also other elements about her. Like, she will kick you into space. Like, she will punch you into orbit. But like, her number one trait isn't anger. Like, she can go from being in punching mode
mm-hmm.
to hitting on Kate and making her feel uncomfortable, like in an instant.
Here's the thing I love about America Chavez that we don't really talk about. That's on my mind because we saw it this week in West Coast Avengers. When she teleports, it's in big stars.
Yep.
That shit only works in comics.
It's real good.
It's great. No, like, that is not a knock against it. It's beautiful. I love that she makes big stars, like the one on her t-shirt. She makes a big old Steven Universe star and jumps through it. And everybody's like, yep, that is what we do. That is what we do.
So we've got a real deposit of great women, mm-hmm. but in the like mid-60s to number 70.
Okay.
That starts with Becky Burdock. It goes through Jubilee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I want to put Miss America in there to make that deposit even bigger,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like she fits in that group.
I feel like she does. Like, it would be weird to put her at a distance to Kate Bishop, to Hawkeye. I also don't – I mean, I think Jubilee is better. But again, we're back into that Gwenpool pound for pound argument, right? Like, Jubilee has probably been in more bad comics than
– And she had more of a what-the-hell-do-we-do-with-her period.
Yeah. Whereas America Chavez, like, kind of got that out of the way. Not the bad part, but, like, the we're not sure what to do with this character part. That's kind of the first part of her existence.
Yes.
She's in Vengeance in 2011, which like nobody read. Like, unfortunately. But then Young Avengers happens, and that's what really like solidifies her as the character. Like, that's what like crystallizes her, right?
Definitely.
So I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's where she goes. But I mean, like, if we were going to not put her in.
I mean, I don't want to arbitrarily say she doesn't go in there.
Yeah.
I think she's probably not as good as Kamala Khan, but like just not. I think the question we have to ask ourselves is she as good as Supergirl or the Squire?
I think she's better than the Squire. I realize that the Squire is at number 68 on this list because I love the Squire.
Yeah.
Beryl Hutchinson, currently the Knight. Made a recent appearance as the Knight, actually, which was exciting for me to see. It would be a lot harder to argue that she's better than Silver Age Supergirl / modern Supergirl.
Okay, then let's put her at number 68 between Supergirl and the Squire.
Okay, so the Squire is nice now.
America Chavez goes at number 68. Finally, here on Cam's list is Aunt May Parker.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Matt, I'm going to defer to you on this one. I want to see what your thoughts are.
Aunt May is tough.
Well, I mean, she's historically tough. Speaking, she's not as tough as she should be.
She's tough to rank. Because for most of her existence, she existed as this incredibly frail old woman that Peter had to worry about all the time.
Yeah, Aunt May was dying for 40 years and was dead for at least two of those.
And it's nuts. Well, I know we've brought this up on the show before, but how old were Peter's parents when they had him? Where she could be 140 years old.
Okay. My mom is 13 years older than her sister. And Ben could have been younger than May. So if Ben's 13 years older than Richard, and May is like 10 years older than Ben, then she could be 23 years older than Richard and Mary.
Okay, so that would mean Richard and Mary were only 110. What? What interesting. Here's the thing about Aunt May. she has been constantly changing, right? There's no singular version of Aunt May. She's been constantly changing with the times, from this frail old woman who was constantly in peril to, frankly, Aunt May has been getting progressively younger.
Yes.
As Peter's been getting older.
Weirdly enough. Because again, you're right. She never should have been that old.
No.
Like, it makes sense that she was. Because a teenager's idea, like if you identify with Peter Parker, a 15-year-old's idea of what a 50-year-old or a 45-year-old is on the edge of death.
Sure, and you know, 1963 50 is pretty different from 2018 50.
That is true. That is also very true.
But at the same time, it's just weird. It's just weird that she was so old, and so now, like, young, spry 50-year-old May Parker is, you know, at least for a little while, marrying J. Jonah Jameson's dad. And
old is J. Jonah Jameson? Because J. Jonah Jameson is significantly older than Peter Parker.
Yeah, you would think J. Jonah Jameson would be around 50.
Yeah. How old is Dr. Octopus?
Look, age is a weird thing to figure out in Spider-Man comics, my man.
Here's the thing I want to say about Aunt May. We dunk on J. Michael Straczynski a lot. Yeah. As though it is a sport. That we're very good at. Genuinely, the best thing he did on Spider-Man was have Aunt May find out and have that not be Peter keeping his identity secret from Aunt May because she's too frail. And that issue where they both talk to each other about how they both blamed themselves for Ben's death is really good.
Yes. Also, the stuff that happened in Brand New Day where she was like working in a food bank was really good. Like, she's not just some old widow who sits at home by herself and makes flapjacks all day.
Wheat cakes.
That's right, wheat cakes. But like, she is active. She's out going and doing things. She's
got a cool short haircut.
Yeah, cool short haircut. Like, okay, here's what's nuts. The movies did what the comics did, but in such a shorter time frame.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
Because we went from Rosemary Harris, who was like trying to open a bank account with dimes or whatever.
Yeah.
She was doing in Spider-Man 2, to Marissa Tomei.
Yes.
In not even 15 years.
You know what's weird, but I like it? Homecoming Spider-Man, like MCU Spider-Man, calls her May and not Aunt May.
Yeah.
Which I think it's a very subtle modernization of those two characters.
And they live in an apartment.
And they live in
an apartment. And not a house in Queens.
And everybody is literally in love with May Parker.
I mean, Marissa Tomei.
Yes, I've seen the film. yeah, Aunt May is a... Which is weirdly, like, again, at 15, you think a 45-year-old is ancient, right? But at 30, you think it, like, it is much easier to relate to a 60-year-old when you're 30, because you're an adult. Like, yeah, they're older. You would, like, probably still consider them, you know, quote-unquote old, but they're human. You know?
It's probably easier to relate to a 60-year-old than a 15-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. So Aunt May is both a really good character and an object, depending on what the story dictates.
Yes.
Which makes her incredibly difficult to write.
Yeah. Because she does spend a significant portion of Aunt May's life as a character is she's going to die at any moment if Peter doesn't get this done.
She's a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Like, she's the reason that Mary Jane and Peter's marriage ended.
She we talk about this all the time. She was going to marry Dr. Octopus, who was not in disguise, who was straight up like, what's up? I'm Dr. Otto Octavius.
I have these metal arms on my back.
I have metal arms. I have been to jail for supervillainy. I would like your uranium mine, please. She is a plot point most of the time. But I like her.
And yes, in much that same way, Gwen Stacy, who is currently number 232 on the list, is both a character and a plot point.
Yeah. Is May better than Gwen?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's got more staying power.
Clearly.
But I don't think she's – yeah. She's – but not by a ton. I might put her up here – like I would probably put her above Hulkling.
Okay.
And maybe Johnny Sorrow. I don't know anything much about Black Sad.
Black Sad's pretty cool.
Then okay.
Johnny Sorrow has no face. Can't look at his face.
Here's what I'd say. I'd say put her above Johnny Sorrow, below Black Sad.
Interesting. So above 90s Ghost Rider, but below Popeye the Sailor Man.
Yes.
Feels right. Aunt May Parker, a.k.a. Golden Oldie.
Because say what you will about Popeye, and we did. He's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt May is whatever the story dictates.
Yeah. One-time Herald of Galactus, May Parker.
All right, I think that's going to have to be our last list. Thank you to the folks who send in those lists. We're trying to get through these as fast as we can, people. We should have never asked for five.
No, three was enough.
We should have just said three. We'll know better next time. If you would like to send us a list, you can do that at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send Every Story Ever lists. If you want to drop us a line about sponsoring the show, you can do it there. Or if you want to just get in touch with us about anything else. You can also send us listener questions at our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. And you can check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It's where the Every Story Ever and Panel President list links reside, so you can go check out those Google Docs. Also, leave us a review on the podcasting app of your choice. The more positive reviews we get on those podcasting apps, the more we are featured on those apps, which helps us out. So go leave a review if you are so inclined. It would help us out. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net and you can find links to all my stuff, my other podcasts, my books, my social media presences, and my comics. The newest of which is Everything Will Be Okay number 4, which came out on Comixology last week. You can go grab it right now. All 4 issues are $2.99 each on Comixology. It's a good book. You should read it. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
THE-ISB.com is where you need to go to find everything that I do online. You can also go to your local comic book store and tell them, hey, I would absolutely like to pre-order Infinity Wars Sleepwalker and the Army of Darkness Halloween Special 2018, both of which I am co-writing with my writing partner, Chad Bowers, and which are going to be very, very fun. Check those out. Also, plenty of other podcasts to listen to and other things that I have written online. So check them out. That's going to do it for Ajax 417. Matt, I got to give you this machine back.
Okay, just mail it. I'm sure it'll get here. And I'll have it in time for the next Mark of the Beast.
Okay.
So I could tell you what rules and what's trash.
Okay. I didn't know I had the trash setting.
Oh, yeah. Like, it'll either tell you something rules or it'll tell you that it's trash.
Like, I think there's a third button on here, though. This.
Oh, is
yeah,
there?
It says show evaluation.
I didn't even know that was there. I mean, dare we push that button?
I mean, I kind of, like, we do need to evaluate the show. we engage in a little self-reflection at the end of each episode. Go over the tapes. What can we do better? What did we do better than we have done in the past? So I think I'm just gonna, like, if this can automate that, that'll take hours out of our day.
That's true. So let's see what it does.
Hitting the button. Oh, it's printing.
Okay.
Quietly, though. It's almost like I don't want to do Foley work right now. Oh, but I've got paper. Oh, this is HQC.
Woo! What a relief.
S rank, baby. Bye, everybody.
We love you.
Yeah!